Welcome back to part two of Smart Things That, or Dumb Things That Smart Christians Believe. Let's get it right. The opposite might not work out very well. couple of things. Like last month, I'd like for this to be a discussion. Okay? So rather than me just rabbiting on eternally, I'd like for you to, kind of interact with what we're talking about. Have any questions? Please. If you have any disagreements, please, let's have a discussion around these things. The other thing was, last time we were taping these sessions, and last time when we taped it, the discussion part, when you were asking questions, there were these long gaps in the recording where there was no sound. So we're going to fix that tonight. I need somebody to be my gopher. That will, Jack was putting his hand up. Come here, Jack. All right, Jack, come up here. Now, when somebody's getting ready to ask a question, Jack, will you take that to them?
Yes.
Thank you. You're a good man. And I appreciate your help. Okay. We need one of those. Never mind. Yeah, they're funding in questions. Even as we speak, they're getting ready to. We'll do at least one tonight. If we got time, we'll do two, but we'll see how we're going. See how you go on the first one. First dumb thing that smart Christians often believe is Christians should not judge. Have you been in this sort of circumstance where, I'll tell you a story. I had a good friend, when we were in New Zealand, I had a good friend that he was a minister. He was a leader in the churches, not just his local church, but nationally in the churches. And he and his wife split up. And I didn't know anything about it. We lived quite a distance away, but I just so happened to be at a conference where his wife was there, and she told me all the circumstances. And, I'm not going to go into all of that, but she basically said that she wanted her husband back. Okay. Well, he had told me that she had kicked him out and she didn't want anything to do with him. So, I've got two different stories here going on, and, I don't know what to do. But in the midst of all this, having just seen his former wife, she was still his wife. My friend came to the town where we were living one day, and he wanted to meet up with me because he wanted me to meet his new girlfriend. And he's a friend. So I remember we met at McDonald's in town, and it was really awkward, you can appreciate, because I had no enthusiasm for this, and he started in this thing, about, oh, look, I'm so glad to be in a new relationship, and, my wife, rejected me, and finally I had to say to him, you need to go back to your wife, because I just spoke to her not 2 weeks ago. And she told me, she wants you back. She wants to be your wife. You can imagine what that did to our friendship. He's sitting here with his new girlfriend, and I'm telling him he's got to go back to his wife. And I was basically told, who am I to judge? Well, isn't that what Jesus said? Judge not. Have you ever been put in that kind of circumstance? You have an occurrence where you know something's going on in somebody's life, and you make a comment, and all of a sudden, people who don't know anything about the Bible are suddenly quoting Jesus. You know? Well, isn't that what Jesus said? Well, he did say it, but that's not all he said. It was in the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 7 that Jesus said, "Judge not." And ironically, as people throw that verse out, they forget the rest of what Jesus had to say. Because Jesus didn't say, "Judge not," and put an exclamation point right after he said that. He did say, "Do not judge," but then there was a lot of clarification that followed that. Clarification about what kind of judgments to make, when to make them, and how to make them. And this is the thing I think that we need to try to get our heads around, that Jesus wasn't putting out a blanket prohibition that you can never say anything to anybody about anything in their life. He's just saying, be careful how you do it. Listen to what Jesus does say. This is Matthew chapter 7, beginning at verse 1. "Do not judge, or you too will be judged. Ooh. For in the same way you judge others, you will be judged, and with the measure you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, 'Let me take the speck out of your eye,' when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite, first take the plank out of your own eye, and then you'll see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Do not give dogs what is sacred. Do not throw your pearls to pigs." He's talking about your judgment here, you realize. "Do not throw your pearls to pigs. If you do, they may trample them under their feet and then turn and tear you to pieces." Now, you know, just even in reading in that particular verse, it takes a little judgment to figure out who the dogs are, who the swine are, the pigs. You've got a little bit of judgment going on just to do that. So obviously Jesus is not just throwing out a blanket sort of statement that this is how it often gets interpreted, that you can never judge anyone. Okay? Now, about this time, people think, what about tolerance? What about tolerance? The problem is that we live in a culture where most people feel that telling the truth is intolerant. You ever had that experience? You know, that you actually point out reality, you actually say what you see is going on, and that you know that something is not right, and you speak out, and that's considered intolerant? Yeah. Or judgment, exactly. I like what Larry Osborne says. He said, tolerance once meant allowing somebody else to be wrong. But today, tolerance means that everyone is right, no matter what they believe or what they do. And you bump up against that. And you know how that if you have somebody that you know or somebody in your extended family and you just kind of even touch the subject, are you judging me? You can't judge me. Don't you judge me? You know, anybody, if you ever watch Dr. Phil, this is a big one on Dr. Phil, isn't it? You can't judge me. You know what? And on it goes. Am I connecting with anybody here? Am I talking about anything that you've experienced? Or so, can Christians judge? Yes. Where's Jack?
Thanks, Jack. It talks in the Bible where it actually commands you that if you see a fellow Christian slipping up, that you should actually compassionately bring it to their attention, and otherwise it's going to tarnish that church tarnish everyone, and it's actually a sin not to bring it up. But it's that fine line of gossiping and helpful constructive criticism.
Yeah. Back there, Jack.
A question, because I think maybe it could be confused in the definition of judgment. So what does to judge or judgment mean as far as this context?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because I think the thing that Jesus is really coming against is, and it's reflected in, you know, take the plank out of your own eyes, you know, that and also just that what he talks about too in terms of the measure that you use will be reflected back to you in your being judged. It's not that you can't look at somebody's life and discern what's going on in their life, but with what kind of attitude do you bring to that? You know, what is there a real oh, I can't wait to find out the juicy details, and I'm just going to rip into them and really lay it on them with loving power, you know, and when the real censorious spirit just really come against them? Or is the motive more redemptive? Because again, I think that particularly, just like you talked about, Jenny, any time that we think in terms of actually expressing judgment in a proper way, the intention is always that the person might be restored to a right place. It's telling the truth. You know, because when people live lies, it's destructive. Lies always spin out of control in our lives and lead to destructive behavior that end up harming us in some way. So telling the truth in somebody's life is intended to get to restore them back to a place where they get into a healthy, yeah, just a healthy place. I don't. A healthy place within themselves, a healthy place before God, a healthy place before the community, you know, all that kind of thing. Yeah, so the whole idea that, you know, no one can ever judge is just out the window. I mean, Jesus, if that's true, if we can never judge, Jesus actually contradicts himself just a few verses later in verse 15 when he says, "Watch out for false prophets. They come to you in sheep's clothing. Beware, but inwardly they are ferocious wolves." You know? Well, if you're going to try to pick out a false prophet, you're going to have to be doing some judgment calls, aren't you? You're going to have to be listening and making some decisions about this person, about what they're saying, whether it's right or wrong, and then in turn then responding to that in some way that is judging them. Make sense? You know, there's all kinds of places, like you say, in the Bible, where we're called within the community, and I'm going to qualify that, within the community of believers, as we walk together as believers in Jesus, that we're called to make some judgments. You know, in Galatians chapter 1, Paul is talking about those who come along and preach a different gospel. And he said, if anybody would preach a different gospel than the one that I delivered to you, let them be accursed. That's pretty strong language. Pretty strong judgment. But again, it's the integrity of the life of the community that's at risk here, and judgment is called for. Or Jesus, when he sent out the disciples to go into town to town and to announce that the kingdom of God is present. And he said, if you go into a town and it does not welcome you, what are you supposed to do? Remember? Just take your shoes off and dust the dust off your sandals. And, you know, and basically make a judgment about what's going on in them. Basically, what Jesus, when he says, don't judge, he said, avoid condemning people. Avoid writing people off totally. Avoid the sort of thing that leaves them where they're at. Judgment should always be intended to be restorative and renewing. Again, Jenny talked about it. If a brother sins against you, Jesus says, go and show him his fault. Now, that's making a judgment, isn't it? Go and show his fault. And then Jesus lays out some steps that if they don't respond to what you are saying to them, well, then you're supposed to take some witnesses. And again, speak to them about what's going on in their life. Judgment, in some sense. But again, redemptive in its intention. And Jesus says, finally, if they won't respond to you or the witnesses that you bring, go to the church. And if that doesn't work, then treat them as a pagan, as an unbeliever, as someone needing salvation. All those kinds of actions requires us to make some judgments. Yes. Sorry?
What does not condemning someone mean?
Well, I think basically it means that you're just writing them off. And you're consigning them. You say, you know, if you don't do this, you're going to hell. We just don't see any possibility of you getting in a better place. I'm just going to just write you off and forget about you. Oh, sorry, Peter. All right. Yeah. It's basically leaving a person in a place where they feel like that all you're doing is running them down, that you really don't care about them. All you want to do is just point out the worst things that are going on in their life. And somehow you take some delight in pointing that out. Now, let me tell you, there are people who are like that. You know, they love going around with their sin detector, just waiting for, you know, somebody that they might just, you know, really put the hammer on. That's not redemptive. And that's exactly this kind of thing that Jesus is talking about. That's why he said, you know, if you've got this attitude in you that you think, I just can't wait to find somebody that I can just lower the hammer on, maybe you need to take the plank out of your own eye before you go worrying about that little speck that's in your brother's eye. You've got a log in your own eye that you're not even seeing. So again, it's about the heart that is behind making the kind of judgments that you do. It's not that we never make any judgments about anybody. It's just that when we do it in the right kind of spirit. Basically, Jesus said, if you want to be able to deal rightly, deal with your own stuff first. Gary. Well, I think you're right. The idea is restoration. The idea is redemptive. You're pointing out something. You say, this is harmful. It's harmful to you. It's harmful to me. You know, and that's why you're trying to make a judgment where you're saying that we need to clear the air on this. Or you need to get right around this issue because I can see that this is leading you to a place where it's going to be harmful to you. It's going to be harmful to the people around you. It's going to be harmful to your family or the church or whoever that you're connected with. So, you know, there is the intention, again, is to restore, to get them in that good place again. But it's interesting how that when Jesus and the scriptures talk about judgment, they primarily keep it focused within the community of faith. It assumes certain things in terms of relationship with one another, that we are given the privilege and we are given the responsibility of holding one another accountable. Hang on.
Sorry. Is that so outside the church when you've got, because many of us have those friendships when you can see that it's going to cause harm, is it best just to hold your tongue?
Well, it depends on the relationship you have with you. But I think Paul gives some wise counsel around this issue. He was writing to the Corinthian church, and there was all kinds of issues going on. I mean, it was a mess. You know, some guy was sleeping with his mother-in-law, I think it was, and you know, there was just some wild and weird stuff. People were at each other's throats. There was all kinds of stuff going on. A lot of good stuff going on, but there was other stuff going on. And Paul's written a lot of recommendations to us. But one of the things he comes down and says is that, look, when you are expressing judgment, be careful about outside. And this is what he says. This is 1 Corinthians 5, 9 to 13. Paul says, I wrote to you in my epistle not to keep company with sexually immoral people. Yet I certainly did not mean with the sexually immoral people of this world or with the covetous or extortioners or idolaters. Since then, you would need to go out of the world. But now I've written to you not to keep company with anyone named a brother who is sexually immoral or covetous or an idolater or a reviler or a drunkard or an extortioner, not to even to eat with such a person. For what have I to do with judging those who are outside? Do you judge those who are inside? But those who are outside, God judges. Therefore, put away from yourselves the evil person. So again, it's just basically setting parameters around the kind of judgments. People, he's saying, look, there's a whole lot of responsibility that we have for one another. And if we see a brother or sister acting in a way that we know is contrary to God's will, like the guy I told you about, I believe that was contrary. The relationship he's having with that his new girlfriend was contrary to God's will for him. Had to speak. You know, but he was a brother. Now, if that had just been somebody off the street, if they'd asked my opinion, yeah, I'd tell them, look, I think this is not, but I'm just not going to go in all guns blazing. And I think that's wise advice. You know, it's good advice in our culture, you know. I think that sometimes within the church, we find it so much easier to rail against all these awful things that are going on in our community and yada, yada, and some are somehow kind of hands off to what's going on right in the community, the life of the church. So I think that we need to get the balance right there. Again, because the idea behind any kind of judgment is not to embarrass anyone. It's not to destroy anyone. It's not to do anything like that other than to get them back into a healthy place, not only with God, but with the people around them. Anybody want to tell? Dennis, back here. Just.
What about in a slightly different context of outside the community and outside the church sort of thing? Like, you see something on the news and you make that judgment. Okay, that's not a good thing. Not a good thing for my family. Not somebody I'm ever going to meet. Not ever anybody I'm going to be able to influence. Have anything to do with speaking to them, ministering to them, anything along those lines. But you make that judgment within yourself. Well, no, I wouldn't want that happening in my house, or want that happening to anybody that I know. You know, I've made that judgment that, for my own self-protection, family self-protection, kind of life within myself, that's not what I would want happening in my home sort of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that'd just be wisdom. I think that's outside of what the kind of thing that Jesus is trying to avoid here. I mean, sure, there are just things that you... That's right. And I think that... Of course, we make those kinds of judgments. That's just it's part of that distinctiveness that we're called to live out as part of the kingdom of heaven. You know, that we're a new creation, that we're living under some new rules, under a new way of going about life. And there's a whole lot in the community that's contrary to that. And, of course, I look at that and I make a judgment and say, yeah, that's not going to be part of our house.
We're encouraged to speak the truth in love. Mm-hmm. And we all have a differing capacity to hear truth. And I'm just wanting to check your thoughts on where you might have made a decision to share and it doesn't go as well as you had hoped. What would be a wise way to sit with that? Like the example you started with, you know, in McDonald's. How do you sit with that moment when you've obviously thought about what you might say and what your thoughts are?
Well, it's agonizing. And on reflection, I could probably have approached it a little bit differently. Because at the end of the day, it broke our relationship. I never had another conversation with him. And it's interesting. A couple of things there. That text that you mentioned, speaking the truth in love, I've been challenged around that. Graham Cook has an interesting comment around that. He said, speaking the truth in love means you speak the truth, but that doesn't necessarily mean you speak what is true. And what he means by that is that what is true, it may be the behavior they're involved in. But the truth is what God, how God sees them and what God wants for them. You see the distinction? The one thing, the action that they're involved in, what they're doing is true, but it's not necessarily the truth. The truth is what is God's heart towards them. The truth is what God's call is for them, how God views this situation, how God views them in this situation. And that can be different because one just focuses on the action itself rather than calling them into a redemptive place where they are restored in some way to a good and healthy relationship. As far as what you do if it's not well received, well, sometimes you just have to live with it, eh? I mean, I wish that there were ways that you could say, well, just if you do this and do this and do this, because at the end of the day, if they're not willing to receive something that, you know, that, first of all, it assumes that what you're saying is correct and that the judgment that you're made is a good one. And assuming that, you know, then you have no control over how they respond. And it could be that you need to allow time for God to do a work in their heart. You know, I don't know what else you do in that case. It's not easy, is it? Chris?
It does say somewhere in the Bible you're called to make a right judgment. So judgment, Jesus does say that judgment is okay, and we've talked about no condemnation, no hypocrisy, right attitude, so all those things hold. So if you've gone through all that and you've said something to somebody and you've done it all the right way, then their reaction, if it severs the relationship, that's just the way it's going to have to be. But at least you've done the right thing, and that person's salvation or their eternity is not on your hands. Their blood is not on your hands. And so it's simply between them and God. You've just been the mouthpiece of a message. And if that means your relationship is severed, well, that's just the way it's going to be.
Well, it's kind of like that thing that Jesus talked about in Matthew 18, about you go through that process. You go to the person individually, one-on-one, or you take some witnesses next, or you bring them before the church. And then what did Jesus say? Well, if they won't respond to anything like that, treat them like a pagan. Because obviously there's some work that needs to happen in their heart. Now that's a big call. But it's about the integrity of the community of Christ.
It's also the integrity of your judgment.
Yeah, that's right. Because if by the time you by the time you're bringing in some witnesses, you better have your ducks in a row, eh? Because if somebody else looking into this and they're hearing what you're saying, they think, well, no, that's not right. You know, that's really off the wall. Well, then you got a problem. But hopefully, if you've got a witness, they say, yeah, well, I think you're right on this one, and we'll back you up. I think of something like, you know, as in Galatians 6, right at the end of Galatians 5, Galatians 6, Paul says, if any of you is caught in sin, you who are spiritual, restore such a one in gentleness. But then take heed to yourself, that lest you yourself fall into sin. You know, I think there's some judgment going on there. But there again, it's the redemptive purpose in it, that as I do this, it's because I really care about you. I care about what's going on in your life. You know, if I know someone really cares about me and really wants to, really takes me seriously, and if they come and speak to me about something, I'm far more willing to receive it than from some turkey that just walks up to me and just starts blasting away. You know? Because the first person I know cares about me. And they're going to want to live with me after or through this process. The other person just wants an opportunity to chop me off at the knees and watch me go down. Big difference. And I think that's what Jesus is talking about here. I think that's what he's trying to get away from, that person that just wants to chop people off at the knees. Again, it's what Jesus was always confronting with the Pharisees. They wanted to win the battle. They wanted to take Jesus out. Sometimes they even made stuff up. So, that makes sense? So, judgment primarily, first of all, Jesus does not dismiss judgment. But he does tell us to be very careful how you express it, how you go about it. Make sure that your own heart's right before you go and, you know, begin to talk about somebody with somebody about something that's very sensitive. I don't know if this applies or not. I read a good thing the other day that this guy had written in, and he was flatting with this guy, and this guy had terrible BO. And he says, how do I go talk to this guy about his BO? Because it's bad. And he said, I've tried to just kind of broach it and so forth. But I like the suggestion that he gave. He said, when you go to your friend, say something to the effect that I need to talk to you about something that's important to you and to me. But I'm afraid in even raising it, it's going to affect our relationship. I want to ask you for permission to broach this subject with you. Now, I don't know about you, but if somebody came to me like that, I thought, well, I'd be dying out of curiosity to just find out what it is, you know. But I thought that seemed like wise advice to me. Because you're basically then, you're given permission to speak in, but also you're communicating that I don't want this to harm our relationship, but we do need to touch this subject. Now, BO is one thing. It could be, you know, adultery and things like that are another one. But I have to tell you, I don't know what it is about my friends. I've just had a few friends who I've had this issue with. I think I'll stop being friends with people. It just seems like, anyway. But anything else? Does do you understand where Jesus is at about do not judge? Does that make sense? Because it so often, you hear it regularly on telly, you can't judge me. You don't judge me. Well, maybe. Maybe there's times we need to just keep our mouth shut, because we don't have any relationship with the person. What we said is just going to pour petrol on the fire, But it never means that we can't ever say anything to anybody. I had somebody recently come to me and talk about somebody very close to them, and they could see that this person was making some really bad steps in their life, and this person said to me, "Well, but I couldn't say that because I'd be judging him." But, well, you're a Christian. He's a Christian. Maybe you should say something. Especially because they were very close in their relationship. And I think Jesus would be down with that. All right? Any other questions, comments? Any of you had any circumstances like this where you've had to?
Just a comment. I just think it's good for us to review and be in touch with our own heart attitude, isn't it? I know sometimes when we're chatting, some people will share and they'll start their sentence with, "I don't want to be judgmental, but..." it's a good check about, what is my heart attitude in those moments.
Yeah.
But often, I guess, there's some false guilt in being judgmental when you're actually not. God created us with these amazing, complex brains and thoughts and hearts and emotions, and it's so beautiful that we have the freedom to share that with wisdom. And in a society where we were talking about not tolerating our thoughts, we do need to express it with wisdom. Yeah,
because, again, we're growing up increasingly in a context that says whatever anyone chooses to do is right because it's right for them. Well, we need to make some judgments around that.
Yeah, because I was going to mention also, takes a bit of courage because it's kind of that thing, if you say it, then you've actually got to put out there that you see the relationship as more important than the thing that you're talking about. It takes a bit of courage to follow them up later and say, "How's it going?"
Yeah.
It's not that easy either.
Right? Yeah. Look, I think it's something that's, well, maybe it's only in my own mind it's closely related, but I think it's closely related is when somebody confesses something. You've got a judgment to make when somebody tells you something very personal. Basically, when they confess something to you, they've put in your hands the ability to destroy them. And you have a decision to make. Am I just going to say, "Oh, geez," and just go off, or are you going to restore such a one in gentleness, with grace and care, and walk with them in such a way that you say, "Look, I'll do whatever I can to help you with this." I had another friend in Canada. He and I think I've told you this story before, he and I were very close. We were actually in an accountability group together where we would just open our hearts to each other, just to hold each other accountable. I found that he had this whole another dark life that was going on that just blew his family up. And he, in turn, again, just right after his family blew up, turned out he was with another woman. And it all came out, and Muggins had to go have another one of those conversations. you know? And, I mean, that's, if you've ever had to do that, you know how hard that is, especially somebody you care about, somebody that really means a lot to you. This guy was my best friend. And I remember sitting there telling him that I said, you know this is wrong. And I will do anything in my power to help you get restored back to your family. But you need to know, I'll do nothing to help you with this other relationship. You know, it was a thing to trying to restore him to his family, to his wife, to his daughter. This thing, this other relationship that he thought was so important was going to be destructive to him and to them, and I wanted to see something restored. And I was sincere about that. I would do anything to help them get back together, but I was not going anywhere with that one. That was judgment. But I believe it's the kind of judgment that Jesus calls us to make from time to time with each other for the sake of all of us. Anything else? How are we doing? Is it too late? You want to go on, have another one? I'll take my cue from you. All right? Is that unanimous? Cat? Okay. I gave you your opportunity, so. All right, one more thing. One other dumb thing that smart Christians can believe is that forgiving means forgetting. So if you're going to forgive somebody, you've got to forget what's happened. Now, well, sometimes, and look, this doesn't seem like such a dumb one. I mean, sometimes it seems like such an obvious one. But obviously, there are some people who argue that if you're going to forgive, you need to forget. After all, this is their rationale. Doesn't God forgive? Yes. And thank you. I'm glad we got that one before it cleared up. When God forgives, doesn't He forget? You know, after all, we've got scriptures like Psalm 103:12, as far as the east is from the west, so far has He removed our transgressions from us. Or Micah 7:19, He will again have compassion on us and subdue our iniquities. You will cast all our sins into the depth of the sea. Jeremiah 31, I will forgive their iniquity and their sin. I will remember no more. So God forgives and He forgets. So if you're a believer and you need to forgive somebody, aren't you supposed to forget too? Yeah. Well, here's the thing, and I hope this makes sense. When it comes to forgiveness, there are two realms at work. One is the spiritual and the eternal realm, and the other is the earthly and temporal realm. And God shows up a bit differently in each one. Okay? In the spiritual and eternal realm, forgiveness wipes the slate clean. It's gone. It's forgotten. It's taken away. You don't have to stand before God and wonder, well, I wonder if God's remembering that one. He's going to fill it back up in my face when He gets mad at me. He takes it. He deals with it. He's even dealt with the ones that you don't even know you've committed yet. He's already dealt with the ones you're going to commit 2 years from now. He's taken them all. They're not before Him anymore. The accuser of the brother has been thrown down. God won't even entertain an accusation against you anymore. So He does forget. That's in the eternal spiritual realm. But on the earthly level, things are different. And on the earthly realm, where we live day by day, God's forgiveness seldom, if ever, removes all the consequences or restores all that we've broken. What forgiveness does is offer a second chance. It doesn't necessarily forget. That makes sense? Got a question back here, Jack?
What if you forget but don't forgive?
What if you forget and don't forgive?
Yeah.
Well, if you forget, I guess it's not an issue. Because see the... Sorry, go on.
But what if it's like... Well, okay. So it's like a problem in the past, you've forgotten it, but then one day you like... You remember it again, and then, like, would you still contemplate on, like, forgiving them or just let the whole issue go? Or, like, what would the situation be then?
That's a good question, because the whole issue around forgiveness is what unforgiveness does in us. And the reason that we're regularly called to forgiveness is so that all the junk and all the stuff that's around that, whatever happened to us or whatever was done to us, doesn't have the opportunity to just fester within us and make things worse. So I think if something happens later, you know, a memory returns later on and you realize that something was done that you haven't forgiven that person for, I think, forgive them. You do what needs to happen to know in your own heart that forgiveness has happened. It's interesting. This is something that we come up against a lot in prayer ministry. Sometimes people in the midst of prayer ministry, people have memories that suddenly surface. They go, "I forgot all about that. I didn't realize the significance of that." And in the process of Jesus ministering into that, one of the things they need to do is express forgiveness. Because a lack of forgiveness really makes healing impossible. So it's forgiveness is often expressed for our own welfare. So that that person is no longer owning us by our sense of offense and whatever lies get attached to that. Okay? Good question. It's interesting how that Jesus was asked about forgiveness. And, you know, it was Peter that asked Jesus, how often shall my brother sinned against me and I forgive him? And what did Jesus say? 70 times 7. Boy, that's some math, isn't it? Or Jesus on another occasion in Luke 17, Jesus said, "Take heed to yourselves. If your brother sins, rebuke him." There's judgment. Rebuke him. "And if he repents, forgive him. And if he sins against you 7 times in a day, and 7 times in a day returns to you saying, 'I repent,' you shall forgive him." Wow. The theory sounds good, doesn't it? The practice is far more challenging. Here's Jesus' point. When you're wrong and you're asked to forgive, do it. But again, what happens if the person who wrongs us doesn't want to be forgiven? Well, I think you go back then to Jesus' response. You know, where Jesus, as he hung on the cross, there's nobody there asking any forgiveness or looking for any forgiveness, but yet Jesus says, "Father, forgive them, for they don't know what they do." That was Stephen this morning. We talked about Stephen as he was getting... he's getting murdered by these guys. He said, "Father, forgive them. They don't know what they do." You know, so it's we forgive when it's asked. But that doesn't mean that we necessarily forget. There is a time and place for confrontation, for rebuke, for pointing out the displeasure, what's being done. And God's call to forgive doesn't mean we have to go through life just taking stuff. Forgiveness doesn't mean that we just continue being a punching bag. It doesn't mean we can't speak up. It doesn't mean just rolling over. The other thing with about, it is impossible to forget. You're right, Gary. It's impossible. But it is possible to release the power of that through an intentional act of forgiveness. Sometimes I find that people will say something like, I can't forgive that. And I usually try to get the person to the place, you know, in assuming they're a Christian, in response to what God has in for you in your life, or in response to what God has done for you in your life, would you be willing to at least pray to God, Lord, I want to be able to do this someday. Will you help me get in a place where I can actually release this person in forgiveness? It's a statement of intention that says, I want to be right before God. I don't want this thing to poison my spirit. So I will. Again, you know, you think, and it just makes sense. Somebody who's been in some kind of abusive relationship or been abused in some way. You know, the question goes, okay, even if they get to the point of forgiving them, does forgiveness mean, well, we'll just forget about whatever happened? And does forgiveness mean restoring a broken relationship back to its original state? What do you reckon? No. Again, because trust and close relationships and forgiveness are not necessarily related. Again, because forgiveness may put aside all the bitterness and any plans for revenge, but it doesn't necessarily make the other person trustworthy. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden they're a person that you can just let back into your life like nothing ever happened. It doesn't mean that person will ever necessarily even be your friend again. It does mean that if that's ever going to happen, they're going to have to earn that back because something very sacred has been violated. You can forgive them, but it doesn't necessarily mean that, well, we'll just forget it and we'll go back and start at zero again. It's impossible. So what do you do when you don't want to forgive? Well, I think another little prayer that you might pray is that, Lord, I give you permission to change the way I feel to make me want to forgive. Again, because forgiveness can often be a process. And that process may take a long time. And the closer the person is to the offense, maybe the harder it is for them to be able to, they're so emotionally invested in what happened to them that it's difficult to forgive. It may take time. It may take some God doing some healing work in their life to the point that they can say, Lord, I'm ready now. But the goal is that they eventually get there. Now, again, does that mean that they forget? No. But it means that they're in a different place in relation to that person. Comments or questions? I mean, that's not as, I don't think that's as controversial as, but.
Jim, why wouldn't you want to forgive?
Well, that's a good question. Particularly once you become aware that the fact that the only victim in unforgiveness is you. You're not hurting the other person. But it's just the, you know, as you refuse to forgive, all kinds of nasty bitterness is being released into your system that just keeps building up, keeps tearing open the wound, just keeps poisoning with an infection. And I'm trying to find metaphors to kind of express, but it really does. I always remember this guy I knew in New Zealand. He was a strong Christian guy. He was a minister, long-time minister. And he went to a family reunion kind of thing, and there was this bitter row that broke out, and the family just blew up at this thing. This guy came home like this, and he spent the rest of his life like this. And I'm sure it was because of unforgiveness. There was something that happened in that he went away like this and came back like this. And it really, he spent his whole rest of his life like that. That's sad. But that's that's an extreme example of the power of bitterness and unforgiveness in somebody's life. It worked itself out in him physically. And I think part of the reason that it was so extreme was he knew in somewhere deep within his spirit that this was totally contrary to everything he stood for as a believer in Jesus. But yet the wound was so deep and that he just couldn't find a way to. Again, that's my estimation. He might, I don't know. I don't know how else to explain it other than went away in one condition, came back in another. Scary, eh? Keep the account short. As far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. You know? Never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God. Vengeance is mine. I will repay, says the Lord. Romans 12. Forgiveness is really, forgiveness is an essential part of life together. I wonder how many relationships have been destroyed because somebody won't forgive somebody. Far too many. Far too many. Questions? Comments? I'll quit. Thank you. Thank you for your attentiveness. Thank you for your input. Hopefully the Lord has given you something to chew on tonight. Think about a little bit deeper. We're going to do anything to conclude?